Hey folks, this is Shang from Firestormfan.com. Today we continue our interview with Jerry Conway, Firestorm co-creator and the man who wrote Firestorm's adventures for 9 years. This is part two of the interview and goes about 30 minutes. If you haven't listened to the first part, you can find it over at Firestormfan.com. In this part, Jerry covers things like Firestorm merchandise, creator rights, including some thoughts about the Punisher, how he would approach writing Firestorm today, what comics Jerry reads nowadays, some chat about Justice League Detroit, and much, much more. If you liked the interview, be sure to stop by firestormfan.com and let us know. With that, here's the conclusion to the firestormfan.com interview with Jerry Conway.
Super Friends, the legendary superpower show.
Well, obviously the character's been successful for DC. I mean, if you look at it, he's on T-shirts, and I'm talking about the Ronnie version.
Yeah.
He's on T-shirts, he's on pint glasses, he's been on the Super Friends. I mean, they've made a lot of money off this.
Yeah.
What's it like for you to see something that you created grow beyond your original involvement?
Oh, it's a tremendous kick. I mean, I'm looking across my desk right now at one of these glasses, you know, that Firestorm glasses, you know, and it's fun. You know, my wife says, can we put this away somewhere? And I'm like, no, it's got to stay out. It's like my character.
I'm drinking out of one right now, by the way.
There you go. I remember when DC first came out, when the first Firestorm figure came out from Hasbro, I guess it was, relating to Super Friends, you know, because it was on Super Friends.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Orlando showed it to me, and I was like, because he had one of the pre-production models of it, and it's little, you know, the little tiny figure, and I was just like, wow, that is the coolest thing. Of course, there are tons of things that I've done now that are out, you know, in models and action figures and statues and so on. But that was the first, and it was has always remained a special place a special place in my heart. Precisely because of that. So I'm very happy, you know, it's like a proud parent, you know, but like any parent, you know, you have to let go of it and say, well, you know, you're on your own. Go do what you're going to do. You know?
You mentioned the Super Friends. First of all, I just want you to, I don't know if you've read anything about the action figure stuff over the years. I did some research on it recently. The Firestorm action figure from that run is actually regarded as one of the absolute favorites out of the run.
Ah,
just because the design, the look, and it still remains one of everyone's favorites. So it's neat to me to see that it's continued to be popular after all these years.
And I have one mint in the box.
Impressive. Well, when I was looking at you on IMDb, you're credited as a writer for the Super Friends cartoon that season that Firestorm first appeared.
I didn't write for it. I think that they for whatever, I think I got a credit on it, you know, for the story, because they adapted a story or something. But I didn't write any scripts for Super Friends.
Oh, okay.
I have no idea why that would be that on there. I think I did an interview for the DVD release, which I don't know whether they used it, because I never look at the DVDs when they come out, you know, that I've done interviews for, because I hate looking at myself. And I'm always feeling like I'm going to sound like an idiot, you know, and it's just like, God, you know. The only one that I've actually seen is one I did for Iron Man, of all things, because I only read Iron Man briefly. But I knew that they were going to use it because they had my toys in the background. And I knew that this is just from a visual point of view, you've got to use those figures. You know, you've got to do that, use that interview, because he's got the big figure behind him. it was classic manipulation on my part.
Well, clearly it worked.
There you go. So, what can I say?
You've mentioned some other interviews that meeting Geoff Johns played a role in your returning to comics.
Yes.
Now, Geoff's currently doing big things with Firestorm and Blackest Night, like we talked about. Have you and Geoff ever talked about Firestorm specifically? And have you ever been consulted by writers that handled your characters after you?
Yeah, well, the answer to the second one first, no.
Okay.
And they really probably shouldn't, you know, because they've got to do their take on it. You know, just like I didn't ask Stan what he wanted to do with Spider-Man. But I actually never talked. I don't think I talked to Jeff specifically about Spider-Man, about Firestorm. But when we met, which was at a convention in Spain, he was just starting. I think he was just really starting out. When I say starting out, he'd been writing for a couple of years by that point, and obviously was well known enough that he was being invited to a convention in Spain. But this was early on. He wasn't Jeff Johns yet, you know. He was the guy who was doing some JSA and some Hawkman stuff that was considered pretty cool. And Jeff, you know, was kind enough to make, you know, some very nice comments about my work, you know, about how he was an admirer of my stuff, you know. So I was flattered enough, you know, that a young guy who's clearly, you know, on the rise liked the work that I had done and was inspired by it to some degree, that I, you know, started reading his stuff and then started getting interested in comics again. But I don't think we spoke specifically about Firestorm, other than for him saying, I liked Firestorm, you know.
Since so many of your creations, and we've touched on this a little bit, but so many of your creations have lived on beyond your involvement, have you ever encountered any challenges with creators' rights?
Well, the only challenge, I mean, I've never pursued it, because I know that it's a lost cause, but, you know, I mean, obviously I'm, not happy about not getting anything on any of the material that I did for Marvel. You know, I mean, it would have been nice to have a credit on, the Spider-Man movie for the story that they, you know, had semi-adapted. It would have been nice to have credits on the Punisher material. I will tell you an anecdote that I've told other people.
There was no credit on the Punisher?
Oh, no,
really?
No, none. No credit.
Gosh.
No. In fact, one of the reasons I don't watch DVDs that I've been interviewed for is that I did an interview for one of the Punisher movies. And when I picked up the DVD and looked at the back, you know, and they were talking about the special material, you know, that's included. Mm-hmm. They mentioned, I'm blanking on his name, and that's not fair to him. Garth Ennis. Garth Ennis?
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They mentioned that they had an interview with Punisher writer Garth Ennis, and I'm like, okay. You know, it's like, I'm not going to watch this because if I'm not being interviewed, you know, even though I'm the guy who created the character, that would be, and they are going to have a big interview with Garth, who honestly, I don't think did for the character a good thing. Again, we're talking about iconic characters. I mean, people walk around with the reason that people walk around with Punisher t-shirts is not because of, you know, the Garth Ennis version of Punisher, which, while it was popular, you know, to a degree, was never as popular or as iconic as the one that Ross and I did, you know, and that Mike Zeck did, you know, with, I mean, it's just not, you know, I mean, and the movie was a disaster, right, because it followed that look, you know. I think the War Machine version probably did better for them financially, even though it was even weaker, you know, in terms of reviews, because at least they were trying to go back to the Punisher. But be that as it may, I will tell you this one anecdote about the Punisher. I was after my divorce in the late 80s, which, you know, I also think kind of referred to obliquely, you know, in that conversation about hitting bottom. Mm-hmm. I was starting out, you know, once I started writing TV and film, I started dating, you know, and I'd been dating actually before that, but I started dating people who were in the business. And one of the women that I dated was an agent working at, I think it was ICM. And she and I, you know, sort of encountered each other a couple of times, and we decided we'd go out to dinner, you know, and one of those get to know you kind of things. And I was still feeling kind of, you know, sensitive about life, you know, and I was still semi-bitter, you know, at that point. Probably not in a good mood to be dating anybody. But we're sitting there, and we're doing that what are you up to kind of conversation, you know, where you're trying to see if you have any connection. And in an effort to sort of like make a connection with me, she said, oh, you know, our agency is representing an actor who's up for a part in a comic book based movie. And I said, oh, really? You know, who's the actor? He says, well, it was Christopher Lambert. I said, Christopher Lambert. I love Christopher Lambert, you know, to a degree. Mm-hmm. He's fine. She said, yeah, he's up for this movie about this guy whose family gets killed and he, you know, goes on this rampage killing the mob. I was saying, and this is a comic book based character? And she says, yeah. I said, is it like a Marvel comic book based character? And she says, yes, it's a Marvel character, the Punisher. And I blew up because this is the first that I had heard of it. And I went into like a 15-minute rant about these bastards, you know, and how they did this. You know, and the woman is sitting there, you know, with her eyes getting wider and she's backing slowly into a corner. And I don't think the rest of the date went very well.
Yeah. I don't imagine you had a second in there, Jerry.
No. But I'm pretty much over that, you know. I mean, by this point, you know, it's like that's ancient history now. And I've seen my friends, the ones who've tried to get the rights back on their characters, you know, it's been a financial disaster for them. So it's not something I would ever pursue.
Gotcha. Now, are you still credited are you and Al still credited as creators when the Jason Rush Firestorm appears?
You know, I don't know. I know I get a credit with Power Girl, for example, I think. But I don't know. I don't know. You know, they don't have to credit me as long as they pay me.
There we go. That's what really
There you
matters.
Go. That's, you know, I flattery is nice, but, you know, it doesn't pay the bills. But, you know,
right.
always happy to get paid. As a friend of mine used to say, you know, applause is nice. Just throw money.
Yeah, Gary Cohn. I spoke with Gary Cohn and Dan Mishkin, creators of Amethyst and Blue Devil, a while back, and they had very similar comments.
Yeah.
So, credit's nice, money's better. So,
yeah. I prefer both, but you know, you can't get it. I have to choose.
Now, you have a very active online presence. I was very surprised when I realized how you've got your fingers out there in a lot of places. I mean, your blog, Facebook, Twitter. Have you found that technology has changed the way you approach your writing?
Well, the biggest change for me was getting a computer back in the early 80s when I switched from writing on a Selectric, an IBM Selectric typewriter, to writing on a computer. And, you know, it's been... I mean, that was the biggest technological leap because it encouraged me to rewrite. I had developed the technique as a writer of producing publishable first drafts because I was, you know, I didn't want to have to rewrite anything. So I was a very, very clean typist and my material generally, you know, looked presentable. So that's how I did it. Problem with that, of course, is that you don't have time to reflect and to reconsider and to rework. So getting a computer and working in that format, you know, it was the biggest change that I've encountered. The other big thing is email has opened the door for me with presenting my ideas in a more coherent form because I'm not comfortable talking on the phone with editors about ideas because I'm a writer. You know, that's how I express myself best, and that's really, you know, the easiest way for me to do it. So, you know, that's also helped. Now, as far as Twitter and Facebook go, I mean, that's been very helpful to me in things like this, you know, where I'll get responses from fans that I've not really been in touch with or heard from, and that's inspiring, you know. And it presents me with a nice feeling and gives me an encouragement to move on, you know, to go to keep at it, as it were. So I use it as a psychic support mechanism more than as a self-promotion tool. Yeah. Well, I don't feel like I need to promote myself. You know, that's not that I'm adverse to it. I'm just, you know, I'm not the kind of person who likes to put themselves out there per se for attention, which is part of my problem, I think.
Many fans have been clamoring for a collection of the early Firestorm issues, you know, maybe an archive edition or a Showcase Presents. Have you heard anything from DC? Are they considering anything like that?
I haven't heard anything about it. I wouldn't be surprised if they do. I mean, I know that they're going to eventually reach the Showcase issues of JLA that I wrote, you know, the in those big Showcase books. So eventually they'll probably have to respond to that in some way. Maybe they'll do it at that point. I don't know. I mean, I don't think the character is big enough for them. You know, I mean, he's a popular character among a certain group of people, but I don't think he's a breakout character. And again, I think it's because they took it away from the iconic version, but that's me.
Yeah. I just look at some of the showcases they've done, and I realize sometimes it's to coincide with a miniseries that's similar or whatever, but some of them have just been out of left field. And it's like... Yeah.
What, Metamorpho? I mean, what?
Yeah, exactly. When the first Metal Men, I mean, I know they're out again now with Doom Patrol, but when the first Metal Men came out, I mean, I bought it, I loved it, but it was like, really? Is someone besides me going to buy this?
Well, Dan Didio is a big fan of the Metal Men, so there's that.
Very true.
That's I think, a major part in that decision.
If you were asked, would you be interested in writing for Firestorm again?
Sure. I actually would love it. You know, I mean, as long as I could bring it back to my interpretation of it, you know, or bring it, you know, I mean, again, updating it so that it's contemporary. It doesn't have to be the same thing, but it should be the same dynamic. But I don't know, you know, I remember when they were talking originally about bringing the character back, about 6 or 7 years ago, somebody, you know, said to me, would you be interested in doing something with this, you know, and I said, sure, you know, and I wrote a proposal for my take on it, and never heard back. So I don't think that they're looking for my take, but that may have just been then. Maybe it's different now.
Well, hopefully things now with you, being back involved with DC, hopefully that'll change.
Yeah, I would like to think so. We'll see. The more things change, the less they do.
What are some of the comics you're reading nowadays?
Well, obviously Blackest Night. I'm following that, and the ancillary books. I'm also reading the Superman Action Comics New World of Krypton series. I read Batman. I mostly read. On a monthly basis, I mostly read DC, but I also read collected editions of Marvel stories, you know, like the Ultimates and some stuff by Brian Michael Bendis and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So,
looking back at the work you've amassed, what are you most proud of? And what do you consider a high point, both personally and creatively?
Well, I think I'm probably most proud, honestly, of the several years that I wrote Spider-Man. Excuse me. And that, as a creative high point, you know, the Gwen Stacy storyline was, and the subsequent Mary Jane storyline, and those books were among my favorites. But even saying that, you know, is probably being more specific than I really want to be. I was saying earlier that when I was writing Firestorm, I wasn't trying to write great individual stories. I was trying to write a series, you know, of stories. So that's really true in terms of my career, that I don't think in terms of specific individual stories. And sometimes this is why it makes for awkward conversations with fans, because they'll say, oh, I really love this issue where you did X, Y, and Z. And I don't know what, I don't remember. Because... I remember the arc of the character, the arc of the story, you know, that I was trying to tell over a period of a year or two, and not necessarily the individual story. I'm also extremely proud of the Firestorm material. I'm very proud of the Batman run that I did with Gene Colan and Don Newton. I'm proud of lots of different things. You know, I mean, I'm proud that I wrote JLA for 10 years. I'm happy that I had the opportunity to do that. So, you know, it's hard for me to specifically say this particular part of my career, you know, is something I'm extremely pleased with. You know, it's all, I'm just pleased that I had a career. You know, I'm happy that I'll tell you what I'm proudest about is the fact that I can sit here in my office and look at my shelves of superhero statues and see my characters, you know, see 10 or 12 different characters that I had a part in creating with artists and other writers. And that my kid can come in and say, you know, what's the story behind that character, Dad? What's, you know, why did you do this? Who's this character? And I like that. I like the fact that I, you know, had these, have this legacy, you know, that other people can screw up if they want to. I'm glad, you know, I mean, it's like amazing to me. If you had told me when I was 18, 19 years old, you know, that 20, 30 years later, people would still be talking about a story that I was writing at that time just to get through a month, you know, I mean, that's pretty impressive. You know, I'm pretty impressed that that's the case. And I'm grateful, you know, very grateful. So.
Well, I can't go without mentioning your work on Justice League Detroit. I've heard you talk a little bit about it. I know it's sort of a love-hate affair you've had over the years.
Yeah.
With different, but I got to say that you mentioned the original intention, I guess, was to bring new readers in and to create a jumping on point and have a set of characters that weren't tied to other books.
Right.
And it totally worked for me. That was actually the first time I collected Justice League on a regular basis.
Oh, great.
For that very reason. Because I've gone back and bought all the Justice League since then. But at the time, it was like, you know, I know Superman's not going to die, but Vibe, wait a minute, let's see what happens to him.
Exactly. I mean, the stakes were raised to a degree at the same time that we brought the stakes down to Earth, you know, by taking it away from, you know, the satellite, you know, and making the stories less earth-shaking, shall we say. But they became more personal, which is something that I wanted to do. And as you say, you know, there was a vulnerability, you know, to these characters that wasn't there with characters who had other ongoing titles. You know, you knew that every month there was going to be another Flash comic. So the odds were that there was nothing terrible was going to happen to the Flash in JLA. But as you say, Vibe existed only in the JLA. So anything was possible. And probably it's a good thing that he only existed in the JLA.
We some friends of mine and I, we had some fun this year on April Fool's Day. Obviously, I run the Firestorm blog. There's a gentleman out there who runs, I don't know if you're aware of it, a Justice League Detroit blog. And there's a few other blogs out there. But we all conspired together to pull an April Fool's hoax online. And we all published stories about Vibe Rebirth by Jeff Johns and Ethan Van Sciver. We had artwork. We had fake interviews. I mean, Jeff Johns and Sciver both came back and responded. I thought it was funny and everything. But we got the word out there pretty far, so it was fun for us.
It's always interesting to me what people remember fondly. I mean, I think part of the reason that you remember it fondly is because it hits you at the right age. You know, other people who are fans of JLA who had been reading it for a number of years, they came into it and it was like, what are you doing to my book? You know, so it was not well received by the readers who had been passionate about the book up to that point. You know, so to the readers who had never read the book or who were less passionate, it was probably more successful.
Well, if you hadn't taken the chance you did, it's certainly, I mean, there's no denying you cleared the way for Justice League International and everything that came out for them to be able to come in with new characters. And if you hadn't taken a risk with new characters, they wouldn't have been able to either.
Yeah.
And
Well, I mean, the book didn't go as well as I'd liked it to have gone, and I take some blame for that. But I also think that editorially, we were not given the support that the book got when Keith took it over. Because Keith was able to come in, and it was like a fresh wind blowing. For me, it was like the old wind trying to blow, you know, from a different direction. And I don't think they really felt like I could do it. So they weren't, I don't think they were as supportive. I mean, they certainly didn't give me the editor that I want, that I could have used. But, you know, this life, it all moves on.
So if you had whatever choice you could pick out of the sky, what would your dream project, comic book project, be right now?
Oh, wow. I don't know. Honestly, I think what I'd like to do, if I could, is to be given the reins of a, if not a mainstream character, maybe, you know, a second tier character, and just allowed to run with it for a while, you know, just to sort of give myself time to get into the material and, you know, develop a feel for the character and take it somewhere. So, you know, doing a miniseries is fun. It's sort of like an appetizer for me. Mm-hmm. The main course, as I say, is to take something and develop it over a period of a year or two, and see where it goes. But the odds of that happening these days, with the way that they tie all the titles into overarching storylines that take precedence, it's really hard to see how that, you know, it's hard for me to see how I could do what I did back in the 70s or the 80s, the way that the business is constituted today. You know, just to sort of take a character and run with him for a while.
Right. Well, speaking of that miniseries, Last Days of Animal Man is being collected, isn't that right?
That's right. It's coming out, I think, in March, March or May, something like that, as a, you know, as a paperback graphic novel size book, which is great.
I gotta tell you, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. I conceived it as a single storyline that could be done as a graphic novel. So that's I'm glad that's how it's going to be perceived or presented.
I just want to say that was such a great miniseries.
Thanks.
There's a lot of I listened to you talk a little bit about the three-part acts and how you really structured it that way individually in the issues and within the issues, and there's no doubt some modern comic writers could learn from your structure. Each story had a very clear middle, beginning, end, and yet it flowed and it played overall well into the whole structure. I realize it goes back to the beginning of storytelling, but I just, you did it so well.
Oh, well, thanks.
And because it was written so well, it stood out in that way, and it's like, wow, this is the way a comic should be written, you know.
Well, thanks. So
I hope you have the opportunity to do more. And I read on Twitter you said you'd sent in a couple of proposals.
Yeah. So I'm waiting still to hear what the response is going to be. You know, if those don't work, you know, I'll try something else. So I'm fairly committed to doing at least something in comics. It's all going to be a matter of what do they let me do. Remember the film director Alain René was asked, "What kind of movies do you like to make?" And he says, "I like to make the ones they let me make." So
I sincerely appreciate the time you've given me today. You obviously are the godfather and parent and Firestorm, you know, guru, if you will. And it means a lot to me to have a chance to talk to you, and I know it's going to mean a lot to the people that read the Firestorm Fan site and get a chance to listen to you, and this has been fantastic.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity. It's as I say, one of the things that I enjoy about you know, having an online presence is getting feedback from the fans. So, thank you.
Wow, what an amazing guy. Our thanks to Jerry Conway for being so generous with his time. Be sure to check out FirestormFan.com for more Firestorm action.
Legendary Superpowers Show.